by an act that Trump himself signed, released a statement saying there is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised, and that the November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. And when you continually insist that the election was stolen in big cities and suggest that remedying this calls for the biggest fight since the Civil War, things start to get deadly serious. Last Thursday, two armed men were arrested outside a Philadelphia convention center after police had received a tip about a threat to the vote counting site. And one of the city commissioners in charge of ballot counting, a Republican, has been understandably rattled by the chaos engulfing his office.
From the inside looking out, it feels all very deranged. It's people making accusations that we wouldn't count those votes, or people are adding fraudulent votes, or just coming up with just all sorts of crazy stuff.
Accusations like you are cheating.
Yes.
You are manipulating the vote.
Yes. Or calls to our offices reminding us that this is what the Second Amendment is for. People like us.
You're getting calls like that?
Yes.
That's a not so veiled death threat.
Yes. For counting votes in a democracy.
That's awful. And Trump is playing a dangerous game here, because there is a huge difference between not my president and not the president. Trump has chosen to sow all this chaos around the election, despite the fact that deep down, he knows it's over. Friday afternoon, the final states were called by most outlets, putting Joe Biden at 306 electoral votes to Trump's 232. And during a press conference Trump held just a few hours later, he nearly acknowledged reality.
Ideally, we won't go to a lockdown. I will not go. This administration will not be going to a lockdown. Hopefully, the whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be. I guess time will tell. But I can tell you this administration will not go to a lockdown.
Except no, time will not tell. Time has told. Trump lost this election and he knows it. And yet just an hour after that press conference, he was retweeting voter fraud conspiracies again, which is pathetic, dangerous, and in many ways an appropriate coda to a presidency that has destroyed so many lives, not only of those that he's attacked, but also of those he's claimed to protect. So many of us have lost loved ones, either because you could no longer square your love for them with their love for him, or because they fell down a mind-melting rabbit hole of conspiracy theories that he happily perpetuated, or because he let a deadly virus run wild and it killed them. And now, as a parting gift to the country, Trump is somehow managing to divide us even further while also hobbling his successor at the worst possible time.
Now, the Trump campaign has put one man in charge of its election stealing efforts. The jack of all trades, the hero of the Battle of the Four Seasons total landscaping, the star of the new Borat movie, Donald Trump's impeachment bagman, America's mayor. You know him, you love him. No matter, he hasn't argued before a federal judge in 28 years. His membership to the D.C. bar is administratively suspended for non-payment of fees. And he reportedly wants $20,000 a day for his services. That guy was arguing for the president before a federal judge today, unspooling fakakta conspiracy theories worthy of a Newsmax interview. I'm joined now by the attorney who argued against Rudy Giuliani in court today, representing Philadelphia, Allegheny, Montgomery, and Chester County's Mark Aaronchick. Mr. Aaronchick, first, I wonder if we could just start with what was the case? What was the Trump campaign asserting? What was the argument before this judge?
The Trump campaign came in through Mr. Giuliani asserting a fantasy world. It was a case that somehow involves 11 different states in a gigantic conspiracy with the biggest cities in the United States all joining in to somehow manufacture votes and change mail-in ballots and somehow throw the election to Joe Biden. And I sat there dumbfounded because the story that was presented by Mr. Giuliani bore no relationship to the actual complaint in the case.
Mr. Hutz, we've been in here for 4 hours. Do you have any evidence at all?
Well, Your Honor, we've got plenty of hearsay and conjecture. Those are kinds of evidence.
So there's something very weird about subdued, noncommittal Trump. Usually he yells at us like we're on the other side of a busy freeway, but now suddenly he's like a husband helping his wife pick out shoes in a department store. You know, I think they, but you know, both look nice. So, you know, whatever happens, you'll be fine. But suddenly, subdued tone was in itself a major shift, and it seemed like maybe, just maybe, reality was slowly dawning on him. One advisor even told the New York Times, he knows it's over. That's how it's always been with our werewolf president. His mood shifts are constant. A week ago, after it became clear that Joe Biden won a decisive and resounding victory in both the popular vote and Electoral College, Trump repeatedly tweeted, "I won." And then 6 days later, I guess he forgot the line of bullshit he was supposed to be selling to his supporters, because on Sunday, he began to tweet by admitting of Biden, quote, "he won." And honestly, I'm not going to read you the rest of the tweet because it's just the psychotic ravings of a weirdo recluse holed up in his taxpayer-funded hideout. Let's just savor for a moment the fact that the tweet started with, "he won." It's like cracking open A Tale of Two Cities and stopping after it was the best of time. And then realizing his mistake, Trump went on yet another one of his trademark Twitter benders where he claimed the election was rigged, obsessively retweeted clips from Fox News, and scream-tweeted, "I concede nothing."
They were a typical American family. They voted in the election and were looking forward to a peaceful transfer of power. But then...
there's tremendous litigation going on, and this is a case where they're trying to steal an election.
He wouldn't leave.
He's still here.
Now they're haunted by a bloated presence who refuses to acknowledge that he lost.
Frankly, we did win this election.
He's behaving in a way only a child could understand.
And he surrounded himself with spectral enablers. POTUSgeist, leaving this winter?
What a baby!
The president has gone from firing people on reality TV to denying the reality that he's fired.
We have a reality show host who will not accept reality.
Some reality shows, like Real Housewives, do start out as big phenomenons, as The Apprentice did, but over time, if they survive at all, it's by appealing to a narrower and more fanatic base that follows along with even ridiculous twists and turns, and no hope for new viewers. Well, Trump is the show, but that only works if he can keep driving the show, if he can get people, for example, even on his narrow side, to glom on to fanciful plot twists like a stolen election.
But I just want to quickly propose a spinoff show. It's, you know, Rudy Giuliani, Don Jr., Jerry Falwell Jr., Matt Gaetz. You put them all in a house together and they work through their psychosexual and substance issues together. I think that would do really well. I think Mark Burnett should produce that immediately for Fox.
Trump's meltdown has, in large part, been a fundraising scam. His campaign has been bombarding supporters with texts and emails, not just soliciting, but demanding donations to supposedly defend the integrity of the election. One such email read, "This is your final notice. So far, you ignored all our emails asking you to join us in defending the election. You've ignored Team Trump, Eric, Lara, Don, the vice president, and you've even ignored the president of the United States." I feel like I'm supposed to read that while I'm taking off black leather gloves one finger at a time. "You have ignored our warnings for the last time. Now you will pay. We take Venmo. Do you have a pen? It's @MAGA_$!
Let's quote, shall we, from a Reuters report, and it says, "Small dollar donations from Trump's grassroots donors won't be going to legal expenses. A donor would have to give more than $8,000 before any money goes to the recount account established to finance election challenges. A large portion of the money goes to Save America, a Trump leadership PAC, and the Republican National Committee."
You have to at least give Trump credit for consistency. Everything he does is a scam, and this one is no different. He went from Trump vitamins to Trump University to Trump recount. They should just send out emails promising free Target gift cards if you send them your birth date, debit card PIN, and Social Security number. It's so perfect that Trump's presidency ends with him scamming not all of his donors, but just the small donors, the one who give less than $8,000. If you're a rich guy or a giant company that gives him money or endorses him, he'll put you in his cabinet or he'll invite you to his golf course or stage a bizarre photo op in the Oval Office where he wolfs down a can of uncooked beans and smiles like James Bond just poured strychnine into his Diet Coke. But if you're one of his regular supporters, he'll pack you into an airplane hangar full of thousands of people amid a deadly plague.
In the arms of a traitor. Full of doubt and fear, like when Trump hugs Ivanka and he cries.
every day in America, your president gets closer and closer to bankruptcy and criminal prosecution just for being a great president. Hi, I'm President Donald J. Trump, and I want to talk to you about rescuing a Trump. Here at the ASPCT, we are dedicated to stopping your president from being treated unfairly and being criminally prosecuted, or possibly even worse, by the Russian mob. Every day, because of the fake news, your president is unable to eat all of his McDonald's and is starting to think that his daughter Ivanka is no longer into him. Your donations can stop all this. You have the power. For a monthly donation of only $5,000, your money can go help President Trump stave off bankruptcy, criminal prosecution, and find a new, safe, loving home in a non-extradition country. As a thank you for your contribution to your great president, you'll be sent this nice canvas tote bag with a classy photo of your First Lady, Melba Toast Trump. So please, do all that you can this holiday season to make sure that a rich, powerful white man never has to pay for his crimes.
You're alone.
Trump's voter fraud lies are just like his birther lies. His goal was never to actually see Obama's birth certificate. Now his goal isn't to actually prove voter fraud. Trump and the Republican Party just want to create a false mythology that will animate their supporters even after he leaves office.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say? This away, cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you call this understood. You ain't got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Did I wish Sleepy Joe a happy birthday? No, I didn't wish Sleepy Joe a happy birthday. I wished him an unhappy birthday, and I think it's going to be when we, you know, you saw Rudy Giuliani and my great legal team. We call them the Z team. And that brown stuff coming down his forehead, that's because he's working so hard. That stuff coming down his head, that's called satanic precum. That's when you know that Rudy is working extra hard. The left doesn't have lawyers that can do that. They don't have strong lawyers like that. But no, I'm not wishing Sleepy Joe a happy birthday. He claims to be 78. Okay, I know he's old, but I don't think he's as old as me. So I'm declaring that I am now 81 years old. I have more years, just like I have more votes than Sleepy Joe. I now have more years. Sorry, Sleepy Joe, turn up the miracle here. You're not as old as me. Don't have as many as me. And I still have a hotter wife, although Joe's not bad looking, I'll be honest. So I am leaving Sleepy Joe some presents, though. Okay, how about that? They say I'm not nice. I'm nice, okay? Not nice to you. Very mean to you because you're fake news. And sort of stupid, if we're being honest. But I have left him several presents, okay? The destruction of American democracy. Good luck putting that back. Humpty Dumpty. And strong book, by the way, Humpty Dumpty. And, you know, we've got the Proud Boys. We've got great militias ready to strike if you turn over the election. We're destroying the environment. We're pulling troops back, creating strong chaos. It's called chaos in the world. And, you know, we're going to make the world a worse place just in a couple of months. So good luck, Sleepy Joe, fixing the economy, taking care of COVID. Notice I haven't done anything with COVID. I'm claiming to have won the election, but nothing with COVID. Turns out maybe either I don't believe I won or I don't care about the American people. And guess what? It's actually both, okay? Mike, you said you like going both ways. So, you know, you like the both. And so good luck, Sleepy Joe, fixing America that I continue to destroy more and more every day. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
I was a baby, I looked like a pig. My nose was a snout and my ears were too big. My mother would poke at the hole in the back of my head where my brain was exposed. And I could not know it then, but I never again would recapture those wonderful days. I was a baby, I fell down the well. I landed deep down in the furnace of hell. The devil would rock me to sleep, and he'd sing about cities of ivory and gold. And it took a long, long time before I could escape from that terrible hole. A baby, I lived in a crib. I crawled on the ground and I ate with a bib. But then I was taken away and was sold to the circus for trinkets and beads. And I lie in bed at night and dream about what I will do if I'm ever.
When will our hearts?
Todd Merrill, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Aikwit, Catskill, Hudson. Radio, made with radio.
Jan Gabarek, Egberto Gismonte, and Charlie Hayden recorded a memorable live jazz performance in 1981, but the tape sat for over 30 years before being released. We'll hear a long track from that album on the next Deep Threes, along with music from Moondog, Paco Rosique, and Bash Nova. Deep Threes, where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Joan Schumann of Watsonville, California. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7 and 9 a.m. and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
Governor Andrew Cuomo declared 8 new yellow zones in the Hudson Valley on November 19th, all of them in Orange and Westchester counties. The number of microcluster focus zones in New York has shot up over the past several weeks, along with case counts both in the focus zones and statewide. With yellow zones in Orange County's Curis Joel and in the Binghamton area in Broome County being deactivated, there are now 21 active microclusters declared in New York State. Five currently have orange zones and a yellow buffer, and the rest are yellow-only precautionary zones. Is New York's microcluster strategy working? In briefings with reporters, Governor Cuomo insists it is, and has been contrasting New York State's lower positivity rate and per capita case counts to other states that are facing much more devastating upswings in infection. But there are signs that the strategy is fraying, as new focus zones are added faster than recovering ones are removed. Some public health officials think a return to statewide action is inevitable. Former New York City Deputy Health Commissioner Isaac Weizafus told the New York Times recently that, quote, the odds are against us at this stage in terms of keeping it under control, unquote. Another public health expert who thinks New York's microcluster strategy is doomed, Bill Hammond, health policy fellow at the Empire Center. A graph published November 20th on Hammond's blog shows New York's steep autumn rise in new cases flattened only slightly after New York's microcluster strategy was unveiled, before continuing on an even steeper rise. The granular data the state is using to create the focus zones is not publicly available, but Hammond notes that cases are surging statewide and that the county with the highest infection rate, Allegheny, does not have a focus zone at all. Many parts of upstate are now worse than they were in the spring, and the state hospitalization rate is worse than it has been since June. Quote, it's possible, of course, that all of these trends would be significantly worse in the absence of the microcluster strategy. So far, however, the curve has not significantly bent, unquote, Hammond writes. How are microcluster maps drawn? For such an important piece of the state strategy, it's a bit of a mystery. In October, the state published a 9-page guidance document on how focus zones are created. There's a lot of words and numbers in it, but the truth is there's a lot about the process of drawing borders that remains subjective and closed off from reporters, the general public, and scientists who might have thoughts on how best to draw maps. Health officials are not required to follow the lines of zip codes or municipal borders in drawing maps and can use epidemiological factors, zip codes, and other geopolitical or other common geographic subdivisions, such as county census tracts or contiguous neighborhoods, unquote, to draw focus zones, a description that leaves a lot of leeway for deciding what to include. Data that health officials are using to decide where infection is hottest, including demographic data and fine-grained location data on new cases and testing, is not available to the public. With cases expected to spike across the state after Thanksgiving, New York may soon see broad swaths of the state meet the metrics for entering a focus zone. On November 20th, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio warned that all of New York City was likely to enter Orange Zone territory shortly after Thanksgiving. An Orange Zone would close all indoor dining, along with gyms, barbershops, and saloons, and some other high-risk businesses. If you've been keeping up with the skyrocketing numbers of cases nationwide, well above 150,000 per day now, then you probably have a good idea about the safety of travel this holiday season. On November 19th, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued a new guidance for Thanksgiving, urging Americans to avoid travel. Quote, the safest way to celebrate Thanksgiving is to celebrate at home with the people you live with, unquote, the guidelines state. Governor Andrew Cuomo struck the same tone in his November 19th briefing, saying, quote, this year, if you love someone, it is smarter and better to stay away, unquote. Nevertheless, the governor expects a, quote, significant spike, unquote, after Thanksgiving. Nurses at the Albany Medical Center and Montefiore in New Rochelle are ready to strike over unsafe working conditions and stalled contract negotiations. Quote, COVID-19 is back with a vengeance and our staffing is at a critical mass. PPE, especially N95s, are being reused multiple times and now our staff members are becoming infected. These conditions put us and our patients at risk, unquote, Albany medical nurse Leonore Granich told the Times Union. Nationwide, healthcare workers at even the most well-prepared hospitals are facing a surge more terrifying than anything the spring and summer have brought, The Atlantic's Ed Young wrote this week. Doctors and nurses have been working full tilt and many are exhausted. With the rates now surging across the country, there are no reserves of fresh workers from unaffected areas who can step in and help out. Quote, we're watching a system breaking in front of us and we're helpless to stop it, unquote, Nebraska critical care doctor Kelly Calcutt told the magazine. In places where hospitals are already struggling under an onslaught of new COVID-19 patients, Young writes, quote, some of the people who get infected over Thanksgiving will struggle to enter packed hospitals by the middle of December and be in the ground by Christmas, unquote. Governor Cuomo will receive an International Emmy Award for his COVID-19 briefings. He will receive the Founders Award on Monday, in quote, in recognition of his leadership during the COVID-19 pandemic and his masterful use of television to inform and calm people around the world, unquote, according to the Emmy Academy. Cuomo did 111 consecutive daily briefings from early March until mid-June that were viewed by 59 million people. Past recipients of the award include Oprah Winfrey and Al Gore. Despite the fact that the governor has already written a book about his COVID-19 leadership and is now apparently on to the television awards phase, we would like to remind readers that COVID-19 in New York is not over, and a new and acutely dangerous phase of the pandemic is just getting going. The New York State court system is reporting a, quote, dramatic upswing, unquote, in new COVID-19 infections among employees, the New York Law Journal reports. Some courthouses are scaling back operations. Pfizer has applied to the FDA for an emergency use authorization for its vaccine, starting the clock ticking on the process that will eventually make the vaccine available to Americans. With FDA reviews still pending, limited amounts of vaccine currently available, and the first dose is likely to be given to healthcare workers and those at the highest risk, it may be summer of 2021 before most Americans get vaccinated. Among the most prominent people in politics recently diagnosed with COVID-19, Florida U.S. Senator Rick Scott, former New York U.S. Senator Al D'Amato, Rudy Giuliani's son Andrew Giuliani, and President Donald Trump's son Donald Trump Jr. The New York Times ran an essay this week by a tech writer who traced his tiny number of personal contacts and found that his COVID-19 bubble actually includes more than 100 people, which is unsurprising and typical for people who work outside the house, have children who attend any sort of in-person school, or are in contact with people in these situations. Despite this, he's apparently decided to get together with family for Thanksgiving anyway, which is why we're linking to the Times story asking 635 epidemiologists what they're doing for the holiday instead. Now the region-by-region roundup. Starting in the lower Hudson Valley, Westchester County Executive George Latimer provided his second coronavirus update of the week on November 19th. The county currently has 3,975 active cases of COVID-19, up by nearly 1,500 in just 1 week. The test positivity rate over the past 2 days in Westchester was 4.91% on November 18th and 3.82% on November 19th, when the county recorded 392 new positives out of 10,253 tests, the highest number of daily tests since the pandemic began as people seek a diagnosis before traveling for Thanksgiving. With cases surging and new microcluster zones emerging in Westchester, the county is redoubling its efforts to reach local Spanish speakers in their native language with a new series of ads, robocalls, flyers, and PSAs. A press release issued by the county says that cases are spiking in Spanish-speaking communities. The new PSA can be viewed on YouTube along with longer Spanish-language informational video. The city of Peekskill will vote this coming Monday on whether or not to exceed the state tax cap to support the 2021 budget, LowHUD.com reports. Quote, the economic impact of the coronavirus has been compared to the Great Depression, unquote, City Manager Andy Stewart wrote in his budget message to the public. The budget within the state tax cap is limited to 0.67% increase. Peekskill's council has considered raising the tax rate by 2.79% for a 3.46% overall increase. That would cause property taxes to rise by $83.44 next year for an average single-family home. On November 20th, Putnam County released an update case dashboard for the first time in 2 weeks. The county has 160 active cases with 4 people hospitalized. On November 19th, Mid-Hudson regional officials, including Putnam County Deputy County Executive Tom Figuere, issued a statement imploring residents to not, quote, get casual about COVID, unquote, warning that small gatherings, even among friends and family members, quote, have led to a recent increase in local COVID-19 cases, raising the Mid-Hudson region's positivity rate, affecting the ability of schools and businesses to remain open, and further stressing the region's healthcare resources, unquote. Putnam Hospital plans to lay off 13 nurses and warns that more staff cuts could be coming due to pandemic-related financial struggles. According to the New York State Nurses Association, the union representing the hospital's nurses, the majority of the affected nurses work in telemetry and were, quote, critical in fighting the first COVID surge, unquote. The New York State Nurses Association calls the layoffs a, quote, disgrace. In the Mid-Hudson Valley, 3 new yellow zones were declared in Orange County on November 19th. The first is centered around Newburgh, the second is centered in the city of Middleton, and the third covers the northern part of Highland Falls. 5 out of 17 nursing homes in Orange County have residents who have tested positive for COVID-19. Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse said in his November 20th briefing,
Newhouse also reminded residents that this weekend marks the beginning of the regular deer hunting season. Quote, if you hear gunshots, it's not part of the apocalypse of 2020. It is white-tailed deer hunting, unquote, he said. Quote, if you're not from here, you probably don't know what the hell is going on when you hear a gunshot, unquote. The city of Middleton voted November 19th to impose a mask mandate with fines of between $100 and $500 or up to 15 days in jail for violations. Mayor Joseph DeStefano said the law was intended to target repeat offenders who would be initially given warnings. Those over the age of six must wear masks when within 6 feet of others when in public, according to the law. Assemblyperson Eileen Gunther sat in on the unanimous city council vote to show support. The city of Hudson issued a stay-at-home order late November 19th as cases spiked within the community of 6,000. Between October 30th and November 13th, 15 residents had COVID-19, or about 20% of all cases since the beginning of the pandemic, according to the advisory. The city, quote, strongly advises residents to stay inside their homes and avoid interaction with people outside their household, unquote, and to avoid traveling except for work, school, or essential needs. Columbia County released its weekly town-by-town list of cases November 20th, revealing the first cases in two nursing homes, Ghent Rehabilitation and Nursing Facility and the Fireman's Home. Town with the most new cases was Greenport with 16. The Bank of Greene County branches in Hudson and Greenport have closed because of a positive COVID-19 case, the bank said in a statement November 20th. At least 8 school districts in the Mid-Hudson Valley are going remote early for Thanksgiving break because of confirmed COVID-19 cases, according to the Poughkeepsie Journal. 2 students and 2 teachers have tested positive for COVID-19 in the Taconic Hill School District, the district announced November 20th. 19 students and staff are now under mandatory quarantine. The Germantown Central School District will go remote next Monday and Tuesday because of a couple of staff members are exhibiting symptoms and are undergoing testing. Columbia County's health director believes Turkey Day could push the county's positivity rate above 3.5%, which allows it to be designated a yellow zone. The county's 7-day rolling positivity rate reached 2.4% November 19th, but health director Jack Mabb predicted it would jump after the holiday. Quote, it's getting a little scary. We're not there yet, obviously, but we're rising. The most concerning thing is that all of this is community spread, unquote, he told the Register Star. The county saw its 45th resident die of COVID-19, the Department of Health announced November 19th. 8 of the residents have died since the cases began trending upwards in the county just over a month ago. Vassar Brothers Hospital and Mid-Hudson Region Hospital in Poughkeepsie both told the Poughkeepsie Journal they are in a better position than they were during the spring wave, in part because they have both stockpiled and now mandated 90-day supply of protective equipment. However, both said it was, quote, a moving target, unquote. Vassar Brothers President Peter Kelly said the hospital worked with multiple suppliers and it wasn't uncommon to receive a partial order. Both hospitals admitted they have had COVID-19 exposures they've had to contain, with Vassar Brothers occurring recently. Ulster County is significantly limiting access to government buildings and with the Department of Motor Vehicles moving to a by-appointment service only, according to a press release. The county's in-person workforce will be limited to essential staff plus 25% additional support staff through the end of the year. In the Catskills, Greene County officials are warning residents who dined at the Barnwood restaurant in Catskill they may have been exposed to COVID-19. Anyone who dined in the restaurant on Tuesday, November 17th from 12:30 to 2 p.m. should monitor for symptoms and isolate until they can be tested if symptoms are observed. No servers have tested positive yet, according to the county. Cases are rising rapidly once again in Greene County. Roughly a week after a recovery of COVID-19 positive inmates in the Greene Correctional Facility temporarily brought the county's numbers down. Active cases currently stand at 46 as of Friday, up from 28 on Wednesday. On November 20th, Sullivan County officials issued an exposure alert for the Arnold House in Livingston Manor. A person who tested positive for COVID-19 on November 20th ate at a restaurant on November 15th between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., quote, during their infectious period, unquote, county health officials said in a press release. Quote, although we believe that the employees wore masks routinely, many customers may not have been doing the same while seated at tables and may have been exposed, unquote, said County Health Director Nancy McGraw. Quote, if someone thinks they have been exposed and develop symptoms, they should self-quarantine for 14 days and call their health care provider if symptoms develop, or call Sullivan County Public Health Services at 845-292-5910. This has been the coronavirus update from The River Newsroom. Go to therivernewsroom.com for more information about anything in this report.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow,
I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
In Indian country, COVID surges, but so does electoral power. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. More than a quarter of a million people in the United States have died from COVID-19, by far the highest national death toll in the world. Over 1,500 people are dying here per day now, equivalent to 5 jumbo jets falling from the sky daily. At the pandemic's outset, it took 3 months for the U.S. to hit 1 million cases. Now we're seeing 1 million cases per week. These grim milestones mark the beginning of the Thanksgiving holiday week, which could further accelerate the spread of this devastating disease. Thanksgiving is taking center stage in the polarized battle over our collective COVID-19 pandemic response. Public health experts are pleading with people to forgo holiday gatherings with people who live outside one's household or bubble, while supporters of President Trump decry common sense public health directives as Orwellian infringements on freedom. North Dakota currently has the worst coronavirus infection and death rate for any nation or state on the planet. One in every 1,000 North Dakotans has already died from COVID-19. South Dakota ranks third on the list of hardest hit states. Native American communities, as with other communities of color, have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. The Standing Rock Sioux Reservation straddles the border between North and South Dakota, thus is directly impacted by the pandemic-denying policies of both Republican governors.
We're having a lot of people perish. We're having a lot of death, a lot of hospitalizations, and it's affecting us in ways that is not widely known by the rest of America.
That's Jody Archambault, a citizen of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and former special assistant to President Obama for Native American Affairs, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. She explained tribal responses to the refusal by South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, a staunch Trump ally, and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum to issue statewide mask mandates.
Reservations or tribal nations such as Eagle Butte, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and the Ogallala Sioux Tribe, the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Rosebud, they've all implemented roadblocks to stop traffic and outsiders from coming on the reservation.
Governor Burgum, under pressure from the explosion of infections in North Dakota, finally implemented a limited mask mandate. Archambault explained that Noem, however, attempting to punish the tribes for the roadblocks.
She's coordinated with the Trump administration to make it difficult to receive the federal resources that are allocated to the tribal governments.
Farther south, the Navajo Nation is experiencing a second deadly surge of COVID-19 after suffering the country's highest per capita infection rate last spring. Allie Young is a 30-year-old Navajo activist. She spoke on Democracy Now!
Some of our border towns around here are Trump territory, and so there were rallies that I witnessed. And a lot of our people come into these border towns to do their shopping because on Navajo Nation, you know, we have like 13 grocery stores. So we have to travel to these territories where they're not thinking about, they're not wearing masks.
Allie Young organized a trail ride on horseback with the group she founded, Protect the Sacred, to get Navajo voters to the polls in Arizona.
Horse medicine is when you are in rhythm with the horse and almost in sync, and you're reconnected and refocused. As you ride in our own homelands and are reminded of exactly what our ancestors have fought for, our lands to still be in our own homelands and our cultures and also our right to vote.
The Native American population did turn out for this election in record numbers. In the swing states of Arizona and Wisconsin, which voted for Trump in 2016 but flipped to support Joe Biden in 2020, The native vote may have been critical. In Wisconsin, for example, Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in 2016 by just under 23,000 votes. This year, in contrast, and while Wisconsin's being ravaged by COVID-19, Biden turned that around, beating Trump by over 20,000 votes. Wisconsin-based attorney Burton Warrington of the Menominee, Potawatomi, and Ho-Chunk nations spoke on Democracy Now!
The native vote really does have the ability by sheer numbers and mathematics to actually change the election here.
Thanksgiving is predicated on the lie that the white settler colonists known as Pilgrims had a friendly, respectful relationship with the original inhabitants of the land they stole. This fable of an abundant shared meal shrouds the misery that consumes so many in Native communities, from poverty, substance abuse, and the lack of health care to the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women. It also ignores the proud living tradition of Indigenous resistance, from opposition to fossil fuel extraction and pipelines to, most recently, its pivotal role in defeating Trump at the polls. After surviving genocide, violent relocation, and attempts at forced assimilation over five centuries, Indigenous nations on this continent are again proving themselves resilient and organized. This, even as we must avoid holiday gatherings in order to protect ourselves, our loved ones, and the public at large, is something for which to be truly thankful. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 51 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 26. And on Sunday, a slight chance of rain after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 42 degrees. And Sunday night, rain is likely after 1 a.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 37 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Let me back into your life. I can't stand what you do. I'm in love with your eyes. And when you get out of the dating bar, I'll be here to get back into your life. I can't stand what you do. I'm in love with your eyes. Oh, I can't stand what you do. Sometimes I can't stand you, and it makes me think about me, that I'm involved with you. But I'm in love with this power that shows through in your eyes. I go to bakeries all day long. There's a lack of sweetness in my life, and there is pain inside. You can see it in my eyes. Oh, there is pain inside. You can see it in my eyes. It makes me think about me, that I've lost my pride. But I'm in love with this power that resides in your eyes. Oh, you live in
to help us cry when we're alone late at night. Don't you love them too? That where you got your eyes. Oh, and I can't stand what you do. Sometimes I can't stand you, and it makes me think about me, how I'm involved with you. But I'm in love with this power that shows through.